Well, good morning and welcome to all of you. So, what a glorious big red weekend this has been. Walks in the lab of ornithology and the Cornell plantations, zip lines for some of us over the Fall Creek Gorge, canoeing on Beebe Lake, exhibits and admission sessions, departments and college open houses, panels with distinguished faculty members, breakfasts for members of the Greek houses and athletic teams, hard hat tours of the Johnson Museum, led by our own Frank Robinson, plus class events and tent parties on the Arts Quad last night, or was it this morning when we finished? I don't know. So this is my 50th Cornell reunion, and as a proud member of the class of 1961, yeah, I've learned that over the years that when Cornellians get together on reunion weekends, one of the things we don't do is sleep. So it's wonderful to see all of you this morning for one of the highlights, what I think is one of the highlights of reunion weekend, and that's the State of the University Address by our president, David Skorton. But before I introduce David, I want to extend a special welcome to President Emeritus Frank Rhodes and Rosa Rhodes. You've seen, I think Frank told me that he was attending 9 or 10 events this weekend, and they're wonderful ambassadors for Cornell, and there has never been a Rhodes not taken by Frank and Rosa. Sorry. So, and we're also delighted to have with us this morning Professor Robin Davison, who's the gracious wife and partner of our president. Robin's a distinguished faculty member in the College of Veterinary Medicine and at Weill Cornell Medical College in New York City, and she is truly a wonderful ambassador for our university. Robin, thank you. Finally, I want to introduce to you our outstanding provost, Kent Fox, and his lovely wife, Linda. Kent has the responsibility for all academic matters on our Ithaca campus and provides great leadership to our faculty and the various colleges. Kent, Linda, welcome. Those of you that were here 5 years ago for reunion had an opportunity to meet David and Robin even before we officially had them on the payroll and they became part of the Cornell family. And they won our hearts then, and now, 5 years later, it's even clearer that they are great leaders of our university. David is a seasoned administrator, board-certified cardiologist and biomedical researcher, a musician with lots of sax appeal, and an advocate, an articulate advocate for the arts and the humanities. In addition to being our president, he is a professor in the departments of medicine and pediatrics at Weill Cornell and in biomedical engineering here in Ithaca. This academic year, David was elected to both the Institute of Medicine of the National Academy of Sciences and the American Academy of Arts and Sciences, which is an indication of the stature of his stature within the academic and scientific communities of our country. David is a strong believer in the role that higher education can play in economic development in partnership with government and business. And this spring, he was the keynote speaker at an international conference in Saudi Arabia on economic development in a knowledge-based economy. He is also a champion of the arts and humanities, both here on campus and nationally. And this spring, he made a strong case for support of the humanities as a keynote speaker at the National Humanities Alliance annual meeting, and also in his blog for the Huffington Post. He has pushed Cornell to become widely recognized as a top 10 research university while steering us through the Great Recession and preserving and enhancing the aspects of our alma mater that all of us hold so dear. Finally, I want to add a personal note. In my role as chairman, I have been honored to work closely with David during the past 5 years. He engages energetically with all Cornell constituencies, students, faculty, administrators, staff, alumni, and trustees. He listens, learns, consults, and then acts. David is what I call a straight shooter. A few years ago, he initiated a strategic planning process at Cornell at the very same time that we were looking to reduce our administrative expenses by more than $80 million per year. None of our peer institutions did this, and we're fortunate to have him as our leader. Please join me in welcoming Cornell's 12th president, David J. Scorton.
Thank you, Pete. That's a very, very generous introduction. You made me a little emotional, but I'll get over it. That's a good. Well, let's talk about Pete Meinig for a second. Not only is this Pete Meinig's 50th Cornell reunion with the class of 61, but it's his final reunion as chair of the Board of Trustees. A Cornell trustee for 2 decades and board chair since 2002, Pete has guided Cornell with great vision and wisdom through some incredibly challenging times. He and Nancy, a 1962 graduate of the College of Human Ecology, have been devoted alumni leaders, Cornell parents, and wonderful mentors, guides, and dear friends to Robin and me. There is no doubt that we are a better, stronger university and Cornell family because of Nancy and Pete Meinig. We are so very fortunate that succeeding Pete on January 1 of 12 will be another outstanding Cornellian and a member of this year's 35th reunion class, Robert S. Harrison, class of 76. Bob is an attorney, former Rhodes Scholar, and a retired managing director of the Goldman Sachs Group. He currently is Chief Executive Officer of the Clinton Global Initiative, as many of you know, established by former President Bill Clinton in 2005 to devise innovative solutions to some of the world's most intractable challenges. While he was a Cornell undergraduate, way long ago, Bob served as a student trustee, and then he rejoined the board in 2002 and has since served on numerous committees, most recently as chair of the executive committee, acting as Pete's partner through these very challenging times. Bob is an enormously capable leader with a deep knowledge of business, the law, the public sector, and Cornell. Under Bob's leadership, our university will continue to be in very good hands. Bob, we all look forward to following your lead. Thank you. Well, this is our sixth reunion, and Robin and I have fond memories of the first reunion in June of 06 with you. We had heard rumors, of course, about the loyalty and devotion of Cornell alumni, but we didn't make much of it. But reunion 06 was our first opportunity to see you in action, and from then on, we understood what all the excitement was about. Each succeeding year has brought additional evidence of the close-knit, outspoken, and engaged alumni of Cornell University. This year's reunion is turning out to be even more spectacular, with both the attendees here in Ithaca and those in our virtual audience right now watching the live stream, whatever that is. Did I get it right, Glenn? Okay. I thank all of the class officers, the reunion chairs, the reunion campaign chairs, the hosts and other volunteers who have worked so hard and with such amazing results to make Reunion 2011 the best ever. We have a couple of firsts that I hope you are all aware of. For the first time ever, two Cornellians are attending their 80th Cornell reunion. 80th. Turn around, Cornellians, and meet Class of 31. Now, you know, we all read a lot of stuff about health and longevity, exercise, don't smoke, drink in moderation, and so on. You want to live a long time? Go to Cornell. Yeah. That's it. We're missing today our longtime friend, Class of 31 President Bill Vanneman, whom we lost recently. He helped organize this landmark celebration, and we're going to have many, many, many more. Another first. We have several members of the class of 2011 who just lived through my commencement speech a few days ago, and they're attending what we're calling the Zero Reunion. Any of them here? Nah, they were up all night. Yeah. Well, there is. All right. All right. The whole class of 2011 passed the last test they have to pass. They did not wear iPods during my commencement speech, and they did not text me while I was speaking, which is fabulous. Well, let's look toward the future. When next we are together for your reunions 5 years from now, the ones and the sixes, we will be at the triumphant finale of the Cornell University sesquicentennial. Between now and then, there will be a major celebration of the sesquicentennial in New York City in the fall of 2014, and another on the Ithaca campus in April 2015 to mark the granting of the university charter by the state of New York and the official birthday of Cornell. Sesquicentennial planning is moving into high gear with committees that include faculty and students and staff and alumni, with the leadership of Professor Glenn Altshuler. Please be recognized. Please be recognized. Glenn, as you know, is a distinguished professor at Cornell, Vice Presidential Fellow, Vice President for University Relations, and Dean of Continuing Education and Summer Sessions. It takes three business cards to represent this guy. The sesquicentennial promises to be a very, very memorable year, and you'll be hearing a lot more of that. And I invite you now to start thinking about participating in these activities. This only happens once in the life of any institution, and we're going to think a lot about that time. Each time we look back at our heritage, whether as an individual, of family, or university, we learn much about the coalescence of circumstances, people, and ideas that led to the present. Too little attention to the past, and we can lose our way for lack of the context for each trial and triumph we experience. Too much attention to the past, and we forget to live now with its immediacy and intensity and the promise of a tomorrow that we have yet to imagine. As Abraham Lincoln said, "The best thing about the future is that it comes only one day at a time." Over the past 146 years, Cornell has managed to thread the needle, remaining true to our founding principles captured in any person, any study, while keeping our focus on creating a better future. As you explore the campus this weekend, you'll find changes aplenty. But I think you'll also discover that the underlying mission and values are just as clear and forward-looking as they were when Ezra Cornell and A.D. White decided to build a new kind of American university on Ithaca's East Hill. As the reunion program banner proclaims, then, now, always, Cornell. Well, first let's talk about what has not changed since you were here. The quality and energy and vision and accomplishment of Cornell's chief asset, its people, the faculty, the staff, the students. This year, thanks to our distinguished faculty, Cornell increased its representation in the distinguished national academies by 10 faculty in 1 year, the most in any year since I've been here and one of the most ever. Our faculty were elected by their national peers to the National Academies of Sciences, National Academy of Engineering, Institute of Medicine, the American Academy of Arts and Sciences, recognizing contributions that sound like Cornell and their comprehensiveness from medical ethics to mathematics to the design of trustworthy and secure computer systems. Our students continue to excel academically and in a host of other ways. Just 2 weeks ago, among our graduates were recipients of awards from the following funds: Marshall, Luce, Udall, Goldwater, Truman, Gates Cambridge Scholars, a Carnegie Junior Fellow, National Science Foundation Graduate Research Fellows, as well as winners of several other graduate and professional student awards. And what about Big Red Athletics? Just this last year, our athletic teams earned titles in women's ice hockey, wrestling, men's tennis, men's lacrosse. Our women's gymnastic team won the ECAC. The women's polo team earned the national championship only for the 13th time. And the men's team was national runner-up. And this year, the Cornell Student United Way earned the inaugural United Way Worldwide Campus Organization of the Year for their service to this community and to innovative fundraising, our students. And what about Cornell's fabulous staff? The staff continues to make possible the achievements of our faculty and students while themselves innovating, adapting, and contributing significantly to the quality of campus life and the life of the wider Tompkins County community, the community in New York, the community nationally, the community around the world. Indeed, Peter Smallage, director of the Arnott Forest, was recognized as a local hero at the Red Cross 2011 Real Heroes Award Breakfast just this spring for coordinating the successful search for a local elementary school student who had become lost in the 4,000-acre forest last October. People like Peter are the backbone of Cornell University. Of course, the most obvious changes as you walk across this beautiful campus are to the physical plant. As many of you are aware, one response that we made to the constraints of the Great Recession was to greatly curtail our capital development program so that we would not further leverage the university by adding more long-term debt. But thanks to earlier borrowing, to hugely generous philanthropy, to you, to the state of New York, renovations and new construction does continue on this campus. The new Nevins Visitor Center at the Plantations has already won several design awards, even though it's brand new, and is seeking so-called platinum rating in the LEED, or Leadership in Energy and Environmental Design certification, from the U.S. Green Building Council, the very highest recognition for environmentally sensitive design and construction. Weil Hall on Tower Road, a critical facility for the life sciences that opened in 08, was designed by Richard Meyer, Cornell class of 56. And is one of the very few laboratory buildings in this country to have earned LEED Gold certification. And the new physical sciences building and Milstein Hall are also pursuing LEED certification. In fact, by the leadership of the Board of Trustees under Pete Meining's leadership, all new building projects since 08 that cost more than $5 million, which is to say all projects that we do, must achieve a LEED Silver status certification as part of our commitment to sustainability. Now, yes. Now, capital development is critical and very, very necessary as we go forward, but the most important aspect of any new building, award-winning or not, is what it makes possible for our people. To give just one example, the new physical sciences building on East Avenue is home to, among other programs, the Kavli Institute at Cornell for Nanoscale Science, devoted to the development and utilization of next-generation tools for exploring the nanoscale world. Last fall, researchers in the Kavli Institute, led by Hector Diabrugna, Tito we call him, the E.M. Chimot Professor of Chemistry and Chemical Biology, developed a simple method for making nanoparticles that drive the electrocatalytic reactions inside room temperature fuel cells, a discovery that brings us closer to creating affordable fuel cells to power our cars. Michal Lipson, another member of the Kavli Institute and a professor of electrical and computer engineering, works at the intersection of fundamental photonics and silicon fabrication engineering to develop devices that harness the information processing capabilities of light, and earned her a MacArthur Foundation Genius Award. And Paul McEwen, yes, please. In fact, please feel free to interrupt me anytime with wild and uncontrollable applause, especially if it's about me. That would be great. Paul McEwen, Goldwin Smith Professor of Physics, whose research expertise concerns the electrical properties of carbon nanoparticles, directs the Kavli Institute and is one of our newly elected members of the National Academy of Sciences. As if that's not enough, he's also the author of the new science fiction thriller, Spiral, about a fungal organism that is the key to a biological weapon. And he will be one of the Cornell writers signing books, I think today, at the Cornell store. I have Spiral on my iPhone. And when I'm stuck somewhere, after I read very important emails from Pete Meinig, I read Spiral. Now, the Great Recession, of course, has had significant impacts around the globe, throughout higher education, and of course, here at Cornell. Since the recession began, we, and by we, I mean Provost Ken Fox and the vice presidents and vice provosts and deans of this university and the trustees, we have decided to balance our budget and recover our fiscal strength in great part by judicious expenditure reduction, particularly regarding administrative functions. We are projecting to end this year in a positive cash position, thanks to very focused planning and budgeting, especially by the deans and vice presidents, and to your generosity and the generosity of other Cornellians, parents, friends. So there you have it, the constancy of Cornell's excellent people, the ever-evolving built environment, all setting the stage for the next 150 years. So let's take a breath and look forward. What can you expect from Cornell at your next reunion? When our university will be celebrating its 150th birthday, let me share my vision for the Cornell of 2015 and beyond. First, we will keep our focus on access. We were a prototypical opportunity university, making good on Ezra Cornell's promise. Even in the darkest days of the Great Recession, we kept our promise of need-blind admissions and need-based undergraduate financial aid, in fact, enhanced the financial aid packages for students from low and middle-income families so that they could attend Cornell without coming out the other side with a crushing debt. This last year, the year just ending, 51% of the undergraduate students at this university received need-based financial aid, and in its 2011 rankings, U.S. News and World Report, based on data, not opinion, placed us, our student body, seventh in economic diversity among top national universities. And this year, the percent of Cornell students receiving Pell Grants, an indicator, a proxy, if you will, for those in the lowest income groups, 18% of the student body receiving Pell Grants. Many of you joined other alumni and friends of Cornell in this effort so the talented students from all backgrounds could continue to afford Cornell and to dream of and achieve this education based only on ability, not on means. Next fall, when we welcome the sesquicentennial class, the class of 2015, we will have extraordinarily talented students from all 50 states, plus DC, plus Puerto Rico, and 48 countries worldwide. One-fifth of these enrolling students self-identify as underrepresented minorities, up slightly from last year. Overall, the approximately 3,200 first-year students were selected from 36,400 applications for freshman admission. How many are glad you're not applying this year? All right. This is an all-time high for this university and the highest applicant pool in the Ivy League. And we have no doubt that these students will continue to excel and to blossom during their time at Cornell. Going forward, we will keep our focus on access, not only for undergraduates, but for graduate students, professional students, and for international students who, especially as undergraduates, have very limited access to financial aid. We are grateful for the $25 million endowment created by the Tata Education and Development Trust in 2008 that through the good offices of Cornell trustee and alum Ratan Tata, class of 62, chair of Tata Sons, will help attract more outstanding students of limited means from India. And the need for more such programs is far greater than what this university can now provide. When we end our sesquicentennial with you at the grand finale of your next reunion, let's make sure that Cornell is a new opportunity university for students of talent, no matter their means, no matter where they were born. Second, we will set the standard for a globalization of higher education, sharing our knowledge and tapping the insights of the best minds the world over. Beginning with its founding and matriculation of its first students, Cornell has been international in scope, international in aspiration. Students from Canada, England, Russia, and Brazil were enrolled in our first classes, and by the early 1900s, students from China were a significant presence on this campus. Over the decades, Cornell has become a globally respected institution of learning, of discovery, and creativity that excelled in both international studies, that is, understanding the world and its peoples, and international relations, the use of education, research, and academic partnerships to effect positive change in the world. The faculty, staff, and students of Cornell have acted as if Cornell were, as Frank Rhodes has said, the land-grant institution to the world. And the positive effects of this international orientation may be easy to appreciate whether viewed from the East Hill or from the other side of the globe. Cornell, of course, is still widely respected as an international powerhouse and a magnet for students and scholars from scores of countries each year. Recent initiatives include the Tata Cornell Initiative in Agriculture and Nutrition, also founded through the Tata Trust, to improve the productivity and the sustainability and the profitability of India's food system, with the aim of reducing poverty and some of the world's worst malnutrition. We are also, in our College of Agriculture and Life Sciences, leading a global project to combat a deadly and evolving wheat pathogen that poses a dangerous threat to global food security, particularly in the poorest nations of the developing world. The project, funded by the Gates Foundation, the United Kingdom, and others, involves partnerships with national and international research centers and laboratories and scientists and farmers from over 40 countries. The need for programs such as these are likely to increase, not decrease, as global agriculture is threatened by climate change and food shortages become even more frequent and devastating, particularly in already impoverished regions of the world. Our Southeast Asia, South Asia, and East Asia programs within the Einaudi Center for International Studies continue to serve as Title VI national resource centers funded by the U.S. Department of Education. Our China and Asia Pacific Studies major in the College of Arts and Sciences provides a truly exceptional education in U.S.-China relations, including 4 years of intensive Chinese language study, and a semester each working and doing research in Washington, D.C. and in Beijing. But it can only accommodate 20 students per year. We offer dual and joint degree programs with excellent international universities in Singapore through the School of Hotel Administration, in India through the College of Agriculture and Life Sciences, in Europe through the Cornell Law School. The Cornell Law School, in fact, has several very impressive international initiatives, from the Avon Global Center for Women and Justice to the Clark Initiative for Law and Development in the Middle East and North Africa, as well as learning experiences in 13 countries that give our law school international and global reach. And graduates of our Weill Cornell Medical College campus in Qatar, who receive Cornell MD degrees, have demonstrated their ability to compete successfully for the best residencies and research fellowships at some of the finest medical institutions in the U.S. as well as in Qatar. But the world of international studies and international relations is not standing still, and Cornell must change with it. About a quarter of our undergraduates, earn credit for some sort of international academic experience before they graduate what is commonly called study abroad. But at least 40 doctoral institutions and many smaller colleges have higher participation rates, much higher participation rates, and this is something we need to change. Without a clear and strategic vision of our international role, Cornell faculty, students, and staff risk becoming less globally relevant at just the time where there are so many problems without passports. Over the next several months, I will be finalizing a white paper done at Provost Fox's request, outlining what I see as next steps to ensure that Cornell remains not only the world's land-grant university, but also a university where globalization pervades our education, research, and scholarship, our outreach, and most importantly, our view of our place in the world. As we go forward, I have no doubt that Cornell alumni, especially our international alumni, will be critical to this university's success. Third, we will step up to the challenge of public engagement, bringing the talents of our faculty, students, staff, and research and outreach to the greater society as we have never done before. As you know, we have a long and very productive and very impressive history of outreach, particularly but not only in our contract colleges and through Cornell Cooperative Extension and through the public service and service learning in which so many of our students engage. And our new strategic plan includes among its goals to make public engagement a distinctive feature of a Cornell education and to strongly, and this is very important, connect public engagement to the on-campus research and educational strengths of Cornell. This spring, the Corporation for National and Community Service named Cornell to the 2010 President's Higher Education Community Service Honor Roll, quote, for exemplary, innovative, and effective community service programs, end of quote, based on the scope and innovation of our service projects, the percentage of students involved, incentives for service, and the availability of academic service learning courses. This recognition follows the designation of Cornell by the Carnegie Foundation for the Advancement of Teaching as an engaged university. Yet another example is the Atkinson Center for a Sustainable Future, which pursues multidisciplinary research focused on energy, the environment, and sustainable economic development worldwide. Thanks to the timeliness of these topics, thanks to the strength of our faculty over decades, and thanks to an $80 million gift from David, Class of 60, and Pat Atkinson, the Atkinson Center has brought together and attracted more than 230 of our 1,600 faculty from all 10 colleges on the Ithaca campus who have already leveraged $8 million in pilot funding from the center to more than $75 million in external funding for their sustainability research. And the center is building, yes, and the center is busily building strategic partnerships with business and industry and government and foundations and NGOs in order to increase its impact. Now, there's another tremendously exciting potential opportunity for Cornell that I want to share with you this morning, and this is to partner with the city of New York, that's that other city just south of Ithaca, to build a visionary applied sciences and technology campus in Manhattan. And we have responded to the city's Economic Development Corporation's invitation with a formal expression of interest. We agree with the leadership of New York City that a key to accelerating growth in New York City and therefore New York State is an academic anchor that is a world leader in the disciplines tied most closely to fast-track innovation, as exemplified by our unbelievably talented faculty in the College of Engineering and the Faculty of Computing and Information Science. With Cornell's, yes. With Cornell's leadership in interdisciplinary information age education and research, the culture of entrepreneurship, which last year alone started 12 companies on Cornell technology, and our strong presence in and commitment to New York City, I am confident that we are the right choice to establish this center and this campus. Generating new ideas in the areas with the highest potential for economic impact, including the city's core industries of finance, media, design, and healthcare, we will accelerate Cornell's economic impact on this state, our nation, and the world. Now, as you can imagine, competition for establishing this campus is stiff and includes other excellent institutions. But I know that Cornell is uniquely positioned to succeed at this venture. Provost Fox will be putting together a formal proposal in the next few months. Please keep an ear out for an indication from him for more information and suggestions about how you can help create this opportunity, which we believe will be transformational for this university and for that city. Now, fourth and most important in my vision, and the underpinning for excellence, we will renew our faculty. A first-rate faculty in each of the basic academic settings, humanities and the arts, life sciences, agricultural sciences, physical sciences and engineering, social sciences, and our professional schools, is of course essential to Cornell's continuing excellence, just as it was when you were students on this campus. Distinguished faculty members define the quality of the educational experience students gain here. The faculty are why the College of Veterinary Medicine, again, was ranked the best in the nation, as it has been for the last 16 years at least. Why 7 graduate programs in the College of Engineering are in the top 10 nationally, as is the college overall. Why our undergraduate architecture program is ranked number 1 and likely to get even better with the completion of Milstein Hall. And why, despite the difficult economy, our graduates continue to do well in the job market and in acceptances to graduate and professional schools. During the Great Recession, of course, we canceled a significant number of faculty searches and put others on hold, a very dangerous thing for a university. But as the financial position improves and as we move ahead, we will assertively recruit a new generation of superb scholars and teachers. Our new faculty members, like those you remember most fondly, and those who are at Cornell today, will be world-class researchers and scholars and thought leaders who are also inspired and inspiring teachers. We have established a $100 million faculty renewal initiative to be funded equally from university resources reallocated by the deans and by Provost Fox, and from your generosity, to ensure that the faculty of the future will be ready to carry Cornell forward to the sesquicentennial and beyond. And just as I have been advocating for support for the humanities, in particular for the National Endowment for the Humanities, I believe we must continue to recruit outstanding humanists as part of the next generation faculty on this campus. We have made a wonderful... We have made a wonderful start this year with three new endowed professorships in the humanities established by Cornell alumni in partnership with the Andrew W. Mellon Foundation. Kurt Reese, class of 56, and his wife Pamela established the L. Sanford and Joe Mills Reese Professorship of Humanities. Cornell trustee Bart Winokur and Susan Winokur, both members of the 50th reunion class. Established the Susan and Barton Winokur Professorship, and David Ryan, 67, and his wife Kathleen, who are also Cornell parents, established the David and Kathleen Ryan Professorship. All three professorships will enable us to recruit established scholars or rising stars whose research and scholarship encompasses one or more humanistic discipline, and we will keep the momentum going as we approach the sesquicentennial. When Cornell first opened its doors to students nearly 150 years ago, our university was still unfinished. Ezra Cornell, roused from a sickbed for the occasion, made no apology. "I hope we have laid the foundation," he said, "of an institution which shall become practical with liberal education, which shall fit the youth of our country for the professions, the farms, the mines, the manufactories, for the investigations of science and for mastering all the practical questions of life with success and honor." And he added, "It is a commencement we now have in hand. Sons and daughters of Cornell, our university is still not finished. But between now and your next reunion in 2016, I see us honoring our heritage as an opportunity university by ensuring that all students, undergraduate, graduate, professional, international, and economically disadvantaged, can complete their degrees without crushing debt. I see us as a university with global impact and global reach, whose graduates in the fullest sense are citizens of their own countries and citizens of the world. I see us leading the way in essential fields of knowledge and emerging interdisciplinary areas, and with revitalized and expanded public engagement, accelerating innovation and economic growth in Ithaca, New York City, New York State, and the world. And I see us renewing our faculty with accomplished and innovative new researchers and scholars and thought leaders who will contribute to the advancement of knowledge. Then, now, always Cornell. Just as it was on that first opening day, it is a commencement we now have in hand. Let us begin anew. Thank you. Thank you very much. I realize now the party's over, and you're going to come to the microphones and rough me up as you do every year. I look forward to this, and as Robin said to me as I went up on stage, "Sorry, honey, try to enjoy it." So we have microphones here. We have a microphone in the balcony. And to our virtual audience, I believe we have the ability, if I'm not mistaken, to accept questions from the, whatever it is, the ether, the cyber thing, whatever it is. Maybe Lance Collins can explain it to me. Whatever it is, we can accept it from wherever that is. Please.
Well, I think this is something like a trifecta for me because, as you just put it, I, quote, roughed you up about 4 years ago or three, and then last year. But when I talked to you afterward last year, you said, no, I did not give you a hard time. Today, maybe I will, but but it's in with every respect for the wonderful work you're doing here at Cornell. That excellent and historic student daily newspaper, the Cornell Daily Sun, in the alumni issue, just available, has a front page story with the following headline: Africana fights relocation. Subhead: the center will merge into College of Arts and Sciences. As many of us here, I've followed closely the development of African-American studies and Africana studies at Cornell since the historic days with the Willard Strait photo on the front page of the New York Times, and know some people there and at such programs in various parts of the country. So I'm asking you, without any assumption, really, as to whether this is a good decision or not, what your or Provost Fox's take on that decision is. Thank you.
It's a great question. So many years ago, when I was a college student at Northwestern, I followed along the events at Cornell University, as did many other students and student activists around the country. As many others, I applauded the leadership that Cornell exhibited in establishing the Africana Center. When I came to Cornell, I was able to continue to admire the fact that we were in a leadership position, but I recognized that in order to enhance our leadership position and make sure that this center would always be everything that it could be and could reach its full potential, that further investment and a different approach to integrating it into the overall intellectual life of this university had to be taken. And I want to tell you with force and enthusiasm how proud I am that Provost Fox decided, after many years of relative waiting and watching, decided to make the investments necessary to bring Africana into a full PhD program, to move it into the college where the students are already matriculated and from which they already graduate, and to integrate it completely into the life of the university while keeping it geographically distinct and allowing it to continue to develop its own course. Thank goodness Kent Fox has found a way to bring Africana, the College of Arts and Sciences, and Cornell University into a position and a trajectory to make this one of the best programs in the country and maintain it always that way. I'm 1,000% behind this decision, and I hope that you and everybody else who cares about Africana will help us make this a success. I know it's going to be. Upstairs in the balcony, you cannot throw things at me, only questions.
A number of years ago, with great fanfare, the university announced its participation in a project on the Israeli-Jordanian border called Bridging the Rift.
Right.
I have not heard about it in a long, long time. And is it viable? Is it going? Is it existing?
So let me give you a slightly enlarged answer, which I've been taught from years of doing this. The longer the answer is, the more chance you'll forget the question you asked me. So sometime between now and Corneliana, I'm going to get to the point of what you asked me. So first of all, the idea, the aspiration that President Lehman and others had, the College of Agriculture, Life Sciences, and elsewhere, to work with Jordanians and Israelis to bring together scientists of a wide variety areas, disciplines, and interests to do some science, absolutely, but perhaps just as important, perhaps more important, perhaps much more important, to bring together the intellectual life of peoples who really can do much better working together. The intention and the vision were terrific. There was a real sincere attempt to make it work. And as many other things in many parts of the world, problems ensued of various kinds. And we're still not at that vision. We still haven't realized that original vision. But the faculty of this university, in several colleges and in many areas, continue to work with colleagues around the world in areas where there is a sore need to bring people together. And just this last summer, Robin and I had the honor of helping to lead a so-called Project Interchange tour of Israel and the Palestinian territories, in which we saw firsthand by visiting universities in both of those areas, not only the current engagement of Cornell faculty, but the potential for further engagement. So although I, like you, am disappointed that that particular vision hasn't so far turned out to be successful as originally conceived, I'm very optimistic and hopeful that we will continue to push hard to utilize higher education, especially at a place like Cornell, as perhaps the country's best diplomatic tool. Formal diplomacy, after all, is government to government. The kind of stuff the faculty here do is people to people. So I think it'll work out, even though that particular one didn't. So thank you for the question.
So that one is essentially a dead issue.
I wouldn't say a dead issue, but I would say it's not happening yet. Is that fair? Yeah, Dean Borg gave me the certain look, which is, that's right, stop talking before you say something silly. So I got it.
Yes, he did. He called on me.
Yep, you're the last real speaker. Then we're going to have some virtual cyber, whatever it is, speakers.
I am being beamed up. It's okay.
It's cool.
Or down.
You mean a hologram. You're an avatar or whatever they call it.
Well, our class, the class of 1966, is staying for the second time at Becker House. And we've engaged with Becker House in a unique way, and even last fall had the privilege of a reception at the Becker House Dean's apartment, which was quite fabulous, and your wife attended and led a knitting get-together later after that reception. It was a pretty interesting mixture of real-life knitting, a small lecture by a faculty member, and so on. I notice now, during reunion, that many of the other houses are also hosting classes for their reunions. All the things that you said were where you see the university going are just, you know, interesting and in your mind, great priorities, and in the life of the university, great priorities. We've spent a lot of energy, time, and money on these West Campus houses.
Yep.
Our class is very excited by them. Where do you see them fitting? Well, first off, how do you see them working? And then where do you see them fitting in some of the priorities that you discussed? Because they bring so much together,
yep.
They weren't mentioned,
yep.
As far as I can recall.
So you're bringing up an incredibly important large issue, and that is the juxtaposition of academic work and student life. Academic work and student life. Now, one of the many, many things I'm proud of the people who I work with as senior colleagues, I'll give you an example of how we're beginning to bring those two different views of the college experience together, because each student only has one experience and it combines both of them. Dr. Susan Murphy, our wonderful Vice President for Student and Academic Services, and our fabulous Provost Kent Fox, and Professor Laura Brown, who is the Vice Provost for Undergraduate Education, and Professor Kent Hubble, who is the Dean of Students, have formed a, forgot if you're calling it a council? Council. What are you going to say? Whatever I say, you're going to say, of course, that's exactly right. But a council where the point of the council is to bring the academic pursuits of the university, that is the classroom, quote unquote, and student life writ large together for the student experience. There were a lot of things that back up the student experience that I didn't talk about in the speech that should not be interpreted or construed, that it's not important to us. I believe that, if not unique, this is at least a very unusual approach, having all the freshmen together in one somewhat similar setting, and then upper class students who prefer to stay on campus, and many of them do, have these experiences. So I see two things about this. I see the council resulting in even more innovative programming. That programming will allow the students to have in their midst in visiting apartments, visitors' apartments, international, national scholars from every field, people of great repute, and will utilize the community feel that you find in the colleges, a different kind of community feel in those houses, to break the otherwise sometimes overwhelming size of Cornell compared to other Ivies into something not only manageable, but something even much more positive, something that draws together the heart and the spirit in those houses. And I think that Robin's knitting group was a really good example. I would appreciate no more questions that shed positive light on my wife, Pete Meinig, Bob Harrison. This is my thing. So, listen, no more Robin. Wait. Pete Meinig, still for a few minutes the chair of the board and therefore my boss, and therefore sets my salary, wants me to stop. But can we take one cyber question? Is there one? Is that no cyber one?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Yes.
You looked so real, I didn't know.
I'm virtual, but I'm live. So we have someone who's asking if you will share a little bit about your alumni virtual experience through your webinar series and how that has been a change in how you're able to react with alumni virtually.
Yep, this will be the last answer before I get pulled off into, let's see, plantations, I guess, for a nice little party. Take my tie off. Anyway, Tommy Bruce, our Vice President for University Communications, and Chris Marshall, Associate VP for Academic Affairs and Development and in charge of our Alumni Association, as you know, cooked up this idea of webinars. Now, I'm not going to pretend I knew what a webinar was when they first brought it up. I had no idea what it was. I thought it had something to do with arachnids, but it didn't. It has to do with getting a bunch of people, Cornell alumni, on their computers and on the phone, and they get to look at Tommy and me, a dubious pleasure, but they also get to interact with us by talking with us on the phone, and everybody on the webinar can hear it, or by typing into a sort of a chat box thing, whatever they call it. And we have had, I don't know if Tommy's here, but 23 of them. I think we're about to do our 24th. It's pretty close to that, if that's not exactly right. But it's I'm pretty sure we just did 23. We've had them with international alumni at different times of the day. We've had them with parents. We've had them with those interested in topic X, topic Y, topic Z. It's been fabulous for two reasons. One is that I get to interact more or less one-on-one, if you will, with many, many more alumni than I can do even by traveling a lot. And secondly, it generates a pretty good stream of email and further conversation with those alumni after. Every single webinar has been followed up by many, many emails, and so it's been terrific, and we're going to keep it up, and we're going to spread the wealth so the deans and coaches and many other people, vice presidents, will have a chance to participate. Pete's going to come up and turn this off, which is okay. Thank you very much.
Don't go away. You gotta help sing.
Absolutely.
So I know that all of you in this room join me in thanking David for sharing with us his vision for the next 5 years here at Cornell as we move toward our sesquicentennial. And thank you, David, for engaging with this very lively audience and giving us straight shooting answers to really great questions. So now I would ask all of you to stand and join me as we welcome the Hangovers, and after 8, we're going to sing the alma mater.
Welcome, you guys.
This is the entire student body of Cornell is here today. It's good. Let's stand over here. Should we stand? Come on, stand over here. You stand over here. I'll go on the other side. Go for it.